At Her Spirit, we're here for you. We want to help you discover your potential, achieve your goals, ignite your fitness, find your community. Head to herspirit.co.uk and sign up for our core membership. Get access to our virtual classes, monthly challenges, expert advice, and track your progress in our health hub. You'll also find your very own cheerleading squad who will support you every step of the way. Use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 and get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
Hello and welcome back to the Her Spirit podcast. And I feel this is kind of a bit of a marker, Annie, because we are 100 days, over 100 days into the UK lockdown. And my gosh, when it started, we had no idea it was going to go on this long, did we?
No, and I think that's probably a good thing, isn't it, right? Because I remember sort of saying to the mums at school as we were all sort of sent out on that final day, sort of, you know, like, we'll be back, won't we? And the head teacher saying, no, we'll be back really soon. Well, my son's not going back, so that'll be sort of 6 months. 100 days marker, I think it's been a tough one for some people, hasn't it? Because psychologically, you can't believe that you've lost those 100 days. And it's a bit sad to say you've lost because, you know, some people have gained. But for a lot of people, it's been really tough.
That's exactly why I wanted to invite our next guest. It's about the losses. It's about the gains. It's about what we've learned. It's about going forward. She is absolutely fantastic. She's a Radio 4 presenter of one of my favourite programmes, which is called All in the Mind. She's also a psychologist, and that comes through in everything that she does. She is the wonderful, extremely clever, talented, really good writer, Claudia Hammonds.
Hello. Hi.
Lovely to see you in your lovely mock-up radio studio. Do you want to explain to us?
This is my... I am now sitting in my homemade post-COVID radio studio, which is the... It's the corner of a bedroom, and I've got a kind of eiderdown that I've pinned up against a cupboard, and then I have a blanket that's on a table to soften the noise, and then I close the curtains and the blinds, and on beautiful sunny days, I've been sitting in here in the dark, doing radio programmes, but at least they sound
and
nice.
That's what all that is for, the duvet and everything, is it's the sound quality.
Yeah, it makes such a difference. It makes such a difference to dampening the sound. And then people can't tell, you know, once a week I am going into the BBC, into a studio, and people can't always tell which bit
really?
Is done where, which is the nicest compliment of all.
Gosh, so where should we start? I mean, first of all, that thing that Annie mentioned about when we went into this, we had no idea how long it was going to last. What kind of impact does that have on from a psychological point of view, not knowing the end?
Yeah, I mean, in one way, uncertainty is a massive thing that we're all having to learn to deal with, and obviously that uncertainty continues, and it, you know, really is continuing, and we don't know how long for. But I think in one way, if we'd known right at the beginning that in 100 days' time, you know, this would be the situation where things are still partly locked down and certainly where people are still working at home and doing much less of a variety of things than they did do, I think that would have actually been really hard to know that. So I think in a weird way, at the beginning, we slightly benefited from having no idea really what we were getting into and how long it takes to get out of lockdown as well as getting into it, that it doesn't end suddenly like it's felt like it started relatively suddenly. The lockdown started suddenly anyway.
Claudia, you have been very involved on the radio in terms of COVID-19 with your programmes. I think you said you've done 41, 42 COVID programmes now in All in the Mind?
Yeah, so I've done, I think it's 41 or 42, all sorts of different programmes. So the moment it all sort of started, we started a new series on Radio 4 called Inside Health, the Virus. We started a new series that we then made regular, which had been irregular on the World Service, called The Evidence. And then I also present Health Check year round anyway on the World Service, which is on global health. So I have been doing non-stop COVID programs. I have spoken to, you know, the people who know the most about all of this from around the world, you know, epidemiologists, virologists and doctors all around the world. And it's been really extraordinary, actually. And in March last year, I was in Hong Kong doing an episode of The Evidence with an audience there, all about SARS and the SARS outbreak they had in 2003, and all about what had been learnt from that, ready for the next pandemic. And, you know, we kept talking about, yeah, one day there will be something and we'll all need to be ready for it, with no idea that that would be exactly a year after we were doing that. And I listened back to it again, and it was sort of extraordinary hearing the predictions, because everyone did say it would happen, and then in. It did.
Do you get to a point, you know, I know from Louise's point of view, you know, you had a tough time a couple of weeks ago at work because you just said, I'm overloaded. We're talking about coronavirus, COVID-19. Have you got to a place where you just think, I just don't want to hear any more about this. I'm done.
Yeah, it's really interesting you say that. It varies. And so sometimes I think that. And then I am really interested in the science behind it and the new research. And then, you know, there is new research now coming out every couple of days. The speed of science is amazing. And that is a really sort of, you know, in one way, weirdly exciting thing to watch. And when there's something hopeful, it's really good. And so, you know, last week's programme was all about, you know, vaccines. And there are 200 different vaccines being worked on for it. And so, and the progress on some of those really is really encouraging and really positive. And so that's really nice when there's, you know, and occasionally there's good news, like the steroid drug that's making a difference to some of the illest people. But no, absolutely, some of the time, and particularly I think when we were, the first couple of weeks, it was just all busy, particularly, you know, trying to set up home radio studios and work out how we were going to do all this and how we were going to do it with fewer people, because, you know, we had some colleagues who were ill with COVID, and then lots of us, quite a few of us, had partners at home. My husband had it very mildly, thankfully. A few of us had partners at home. And then there was a week where the mothers of three friends of mine all died in the same, within 2 days, three of them died.
Oh, gosh, I'm so sorry.
And that was a week where... and at the same time, I was doing lots and lots of programmes on COVID. And so there was a sort of weird thing of the thing I'm doing programmes about is suddenly really, really close and real. And so weeks like that, I think, were really sad. And then I sort of would think, you know, I've got to spend all day talking about this thing and reading more and more about this thing. And then, you know, coming home, talking to my poor, bereaved, sad friends about what was happening to them, and following them obviously before they died about what was happening. And so I think times like that I think were really difficult. And it's now all in the mind, just back, and we've been doing some programs, some items, some interviews that are about other things, and I must say it is lovely doing some interviews about other topics after, you know, 3 months of only talking about one thing, although it is this really big important thing. And in a way, if you do, you know, I talk about a lot about mental health and psychology, but the other one is global health. This is, you know, in one way, it is the biggest, you know, global health story, if you like, that there has ever been. It is completely fascinating, if it wasn't all so awful as well at the same time.
There's something about it being deeply personal, and obviously it's been personal to you, isn't it, that affects the way you broadcast about it, I think, in a different way to perhaps other stories.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true, because you can't stop thinking about those things. And so, for example, last week, and partly actually prompted by the experiences of people I knew, we did a big item on All in the Mind about how to talk to someone who's dying. And lots of listeners beforehand, when I said we were doing it, emailed in about their experiences and what they'd found was useful and what wasn't and what their regrets were. And of course, all the time while I was doing that interview, I was thinking about my friends who had their final conversations with their mothers. And you know, you can't help but do that.
Yeah, I mean, those are very difficult conversations that we don't normally have, but probably actually incredibly valuable to have them and have them in a public forum as well.
Yes, I think so. And lots of people have been saying how useful it has been to hear about these things. And so I think that what I think makes it doable from my point of view doing this is that, at least I've had something that's kept me very, very busy during all this time and during lockdown, and something that is meaningful, because I think it is really important to have good information out there about COVID. And particularly, we've been trying to counter some of the information going around on social media that's not true at all. And some of the stuff just circulating in WhatsApp groups. You know, there's lots of kind of, you know, oh, a doctor friend of a friend of a friend says do X. And lots of those things have been complete myths. And so... I can't sort of complain too much, because it, you know, it gives me great, you know, satisfaction to do something that I think, you know, some people listen to.
Yeah. On the WhatsApp group thing, I don't know about you, Annie, but I mean, I've cut back on my WhatsApp groups massively, and Claudia, a lot of it down to what I think is not the right, you know, information that's not true. What about you, Annie?
Oh yeah. No, I mean, my problem is Twitter, definitely.
You need to You block your ears, Annie.
I definitely, and it'd be interesting to hear your view on that, Claudia, afterwards, because I want information, yet there is so much conflicting information out there. And you read one article on Twitter and then you go to another and you're just really positive about something and then you go, oh no, shit, no, that's all wrong. You know, what I was so happy about isn't true because someone else is saying something else. And I know my husband, and I only just realised yesterday when I said to him, do you know what, I've just got to switch off Twitter, I've got to switch off the news. He said, I did that 12 weeks ago, didn't you realise? And I suddenly realised for the last 12 weeks, all he's been listening to is sort of economic podcast, anything away from this. Because it is difficult, isn't it? It is really hard for people. You know, it's so hard to, I'd love to shut off, but I don't think you can, because I think you also need to inform yourself, or try to. At the very least,
listen to Claudia's programmes.
Yeah, I think that's a real difficulty. And in fact, well, it's interesting, actually, some young people in particular have emailed me or, you know, tweeted me or whatever and said that what they are listening to is that they're trying to listen to fewer and say The Evidence, the one that I do fortnightly, that they're just listening to that because that will have all the latest research that has been done. Because in a way, you don't need to know the new research and the new findings every single day. You need to know, are things getting better in different places? Are they getting worse gradually? You know, what is it that might happen? You don't have to, as an individual, know all the ins and outs every day. But there's a real thing where you can get sucked into a sort of cycle of, as you say, you see one thing on social media and then you look up something else, then you look up something else. And psychologists have been researching this and what people are doing and how it's affecting people, looking at the research, people looking up stories endlessly on COVID. And what they found is, at first, if people are feeling anxious, it makes them feel better because they look up something, then they feel they've got some information, and that gives us a sense of control, that we feel we're controlling this now because we've got some information. But that then within an hour, people then want to go back and look for some more, because they've kind of got a bit interested by this point and they've got slightly sucked in, and then they look for more and more and more and more and more until they've got themselves back to the bit where they're anxious again. Because if you look long enough, you will find something that will tell you the world is about to end. And at the beginning, actually, it's interesting that that you're saying, Louisa, you've done less, less on WhatsApp groups, because at the beginning I was trying to counter anything that wasn't true on WhatsApp groups. And so I'd be trying to write a script for a program while thinking, oh, but I need to tell them this. Oh, this isn't true. I need to tell them that. And then I thought, this is ridiculous. You know, I can't talk to, you know, I don't know, 50 people in a WhatsApp group when what I'm supposed to be doing is writing a script that, if it's the World Service, 97 million people listen to those. So I should focus on the bigger picture and talking to more people about it than WhatsApp groups. So what I did do was try to get each WhatsApp group sometimes to, I would just say, we've been trying to counter quite a lot of this. If you want to hear some programs, and they weren't always mine, I'd recommend others too. If you want to hear some programs that do this. And then on one group, I noticed that has successfully stopped people from posting nonsense, but they probably hate me for it, but it was quicker than trying to, you know, there is really bad stuff going around. A little bit less now, but more so in the teeth of it, I'd say.
It was before lockdown, I think, when people had those really, you know, London's going to be locked down, there's going to be people on the army not liking you out at the M25. Yeah. And I just posted back, where did you get that information from?
Yeah.
Oh, I got it from a friend. And I just thought, actually, do you know what? I just, like you, need to back off. You know, just not be part, you know, as you say, just, can you look at, I don't know, whatever, but just kind of back off from those conversations in some ways, because, you know, people, do they enjoy it, Claudia, do you think, in some ways, that kind of like scaremongering that I might call it?
At Her Spirit, we know how powerful women can be. We love your strength, your determination, your compassion. We love the energy that sparks when we connect and spur each other on. Her Spirit was created to ignite that flame of determination, to unleash your energy, to build your self-belief, and to help every woman find a way to your healthiest mind, body, and soul yet. We want to inspire 1 million women just like you to be active, healthy, and happy, because you deserve it. Head to herspirit.co.uk, join our core membership, and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. Join our monthly challenges, get access to the Her Spirit Health Hub, and track your activity levels, mood, food, sleep, and stress every single week with your own personalised dashboard. Get expert advice and join daily live classes that can be played back at any time. Plus, find the support that you need to get started and stay motivated. Just sign up at herspirit.co.uk and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
I think people enjoy that they... Everyone likes to think they know something before anyone else does. And so, yeah, and so I think people partly just sort of enjoy feeling that they've been privileged to some secret information, like that, you know, London's going to be locked down within the M25, which of course turned out not to be true at all. But that people liked that kind of, I'm just passing this on to you because I think you should know this thing. And people love knowing the information. And, you know, I enjoy reading about research that's embargoed that I know no one else is going to know about till tomorrow. You know, I like that. You know, it's sort of like, yeah, I'm in this privileged club, you know, humanity. That gets to see it first. So I think in one way, it's a natural part of human thing. Humans love passing on, you know, it's a bit like gossip people, but this is sort of really important gossip. So people love having things to pass on, particularly if they think it's privileged information, which is where the whole kind of a friend of a friend of a friend of mine who's a doctor says X.
And to be fair to all of those people, they're only trying to do the best by their friends probably as
exactly.
well,
aren't
they?
They think it's helpful as well. So and many of those things are harmless, you know. So there was one that was about drinking hot water, which is all a complete myth, but, you know, it's not going to hurt anyone to drink a bit of hot water.
Unlike what Donald Trump said.
Exactly. Drinking bleach, not so good. So stick
not
to
good
water.
At all.
Yeah, but neither of them work.
I want to just ask you specifically, and this is my interest because I've got teenagers, Annie's children a little bit younger, but I know lots of people who listen to the podcast will have teenagers as well. And I happened to be sitting in the queue for a COVID test because my daughter had a temperature. She was fine, by the way. Everybody was fine. She didn't have coronavirus, thankfully. But at that point, I was listening to Radio 4, All in the Mind, and you were talking about the impact of this on teenagers, and particularly the fact that they've had, well, I mean, they've had so much removed from them, haven't they? Their exams, their university life. I mean, it's been really tough, hasn't it?
I think it's been really, really tough. And I think one of the things that is really hard is that we know developmentally that adolescent development and teenage time is very much a time where people are learning an enormous amount through socialising with other people. And that is a very, very natural thing to want to do. And that... the thing that in the early research that's already come out, the thing that the teenagers say they're really, really, really missing is their friends. And lots of us will have said that. But it is so crucial at that age and really matters to their identity and them forming themselves. And so I think that has been really tough that they can't have that. And also they have been, you know, stuck at home with the people they possibly think are the most annoying people on earth at that moment. And lovely as everyone thinks their parents are when they're older, to have been stuck with them all the time as their main playmates, you know, at least, you know, couples, at least the parents say have got each other and they chose to be with each other, you know, so that's hopefully a bit easier. But I think that's really, really tough. And that they haven't got all the good things, well, the interesting things that might be interesting, like school or other activities that they might do outside of school where they might be, you know, doing sport or joining in performances or plays or choirs or whatever it is, or sitting
going to the pub,
friends' bedrooms, going to the pub, all of those things, all gone. And so, you know, it's boring enough for the rest of us, the lack of variety that there is. So I think it's really hard for them.
So we agree that it's been really hard. What about to people thinking, you know, what can we do help them going forward, really, I suppose, and get them, because there'll be a lot of anxiety as well. And I want to talk to you about in a general sense of going back to normal as well. I mean, there's that excitement, but also tempered with anxiety, isn't there?
Yes, and I think there's different kinds of anxiety. So one is anxiety about people wondering, you know, so is this safe or not? And are they going to contract the virus or not? And thankfully, transmissions rates are low in most places. But they're also just kind of getting to grips with normal life again can be much harder than people think. And I've been talking to quite a few people with mental health problems who found it, who everyone was worried about going into lockdown, that this would be very difficult for people with mental health problems. And for some, it absolutely has been. But some have found that it is easier than they thought it would be, because suddenly, if they were someone who was finding it difficult to socialise and finding it very, very stressful at work and finding difficulties, suddenly not so much was expected of them anymore. Suddenly they weren't expected to be able to walk into a busy pub and see a group of people where they might only know a couple of them and have to deal socially with all the others as well, or deal with difficult situations at work and horrible, you know, bosses that they really didn't like and a job they didn't like. Suddenly, some of that, they may be doing it from home, but some of that has been taken away, some of that stress. And so there is a group of people who have found it easier, who will then find it harder going back and are slightly sort of dreading it opening up again, because they've been able to cocoon themselves and formed themselves a nice cocoon, which is difficult.
So we put some questions to you. Lots of people have had questions. Marie says, I know many people are struggling to sleep that well because they're more anxious. What advice can you give to help to sleep?
Yeah, it's been really common, the disruption in sleep patterns, and people having strange dreams as well, particularly during the beginning of lockdown. People had reported that they had a lot of strange dreams. I think that, in a way, there's all the usual rules that apply to trying to sleep better, which are to try to go to bed, always go to bed and get up at regular times, not to have an extra long lie, and disappointingly at the weekend to catch up on that. One thing that can work is having a hot bath about an hour before bed can make a real difference. And the reason for that, and the reason it needs to be a bit before bed, is that it's a falling temperature, which helps you get to sleep. So you want your temperature to be falling when you go to sleep. But you don't want to be massively, overheated, because you sleep cool. There is good evidence that a hot bath can help. Mm-hmm. Another thing that can help is, particularly if you're feeling, and lots of people, if people fall into different groups at the moment. There are some people who have obviously been furloughed and are bored and don't have as much to do, and have been baking, some of them, amazing sourdough loaves and putting the rest of us to shame with all their amazing things they seem to bake and decorate and achieve, while the rest of us don't achieve anything. And then there are others who are trying to do their job from home with all the technological challenges that can involve and how everything seems to take longer, whilst trying to homeschool their kids. So they are busier than ever and feeling overwhelmed. And I think one of the difficulties of this time is we fall into all these different groups. For the people who are feeling sort of overwhelmed by too much to do, there was some really interesting research that I liked that was out last year or the year before, which was an experiment where they got people to write a to-do list just before they went to sleep. Now, you'd think writing your to-do list of all the things you've got to do tomorrow might just make you worry about all those things. They found the opposite. People got to sleep sooner if they wrote their to-do list before they went to sleep, because it was almost as if, one, they knew, you've got the reassurance of knowing those are all written down now, so I won't forget those things. So you don't lie there thinking, I mustn't remember to do that. But also, it's almost like you've written them down now and you've put those aside because you're dealing with those tomorrow. And so you don't need to worry about them now. And that seems to stop people worrying before they go to sleep. And one of the other things that people can do is that if you're somebody who can't get to sleep because those thoughts are whirring round and round and round in your mind, is some people are very good at sort of imagining things and mental imagery. And if you are one of those people who finds it easy to picture things in your mind, and not everyone does, then one thing you can do is to imagine that there's a box under the bed, and that you're putting all of your worries into that box, and it's shut and it's under your bed. And then if the worries come back to you, you think, no, they're going in the box, they're shut in the box. Now, if under the bed feels a little too close to home, you can imagine it going away on a sort of a cloud, like a sailing tornado, boat going off up into the sky. A sailing boat, that's a nice one. You could have them sail away on a sailing boat, or go off in a tornado that might be pink or purple, whatever colour you choose, off up into the sky. And then, of course, you'll think about something else for a moment, and then those worries will come back, and you think, no, they're going off in the sailing boat. I like your sailing boat idea there, that's nice. And so things like that are helpful as well. So it is a question of trying the different things to see which things might help you most.
You know, Claudia, as well as Annie does, that obviously exercise is my thing. So what I do when I can't sleep is I imagine one of my favourite runs, and I kind of run through it in my head. You know, you go out the door, you turn right, you walk, run down to the river looks this colour. And I basically bore myself to sleep quite quickly.
That's good.
Never get to the end of the run. Yes, I never get to the end of it.
Yes, you do need something that's sort of half boring. And so, so I sometimes do maths. I just pick a different number. At the moment, I'm doing 314. I don't know why. And then I try and work out how many numbers go into 314.
Oh, my goodness.
But in the slowest way possible. Like, there are faster ways of working that out, but you have to do it in the slowest way possible. So I might say, I wonder about number 26, and then try taking it away backwards all the way from 314. And when you get lost, you start again. And it's so boring. It's quite difficult. So it's difficult enough. It needs to be difficult enough that you have to concentrate on it, like remembering your route, but also boring. Because you've got to distract yourself from the other thing.
Yeah, I like remembering, you know, exactly how many steps it is or what point I turn, you know, whatever. I like trying to remember the detail of it.
Yes,
Annie.
And that's good because that's sort of difficult. Yeah.
I have to say, I don't, no one likes to show off, do they? That's what I always say to my kids.
But you go straight to sleep.
Oh, you're going to say you just turn over, close your eyes and go to sleep. Oh, I hate people like that.
I mean, I know that sometimes when I've finished reading a bit of a book, that I will be asleep in probably 20 seconds. And I'm not kidding you. And I can wake up 7 hours later. And I live.
But you read a book though, Annie.
I read a little bit of a book. Yeah, I always like to have a good read before bed. But I live with someone. I think insomniac is a bit harsh, but I, you know, it's a good job that Tim listens to all these podcasts because I think he's going to be fascinated to hear what Claudia says because he definitely needs help with sleep. It's been an ongoing problem in his life and it must be so irritating to have this wife that goes, yeah, 2 a.m. But anyway, moving on a little bit, Claudia, you are not only are a psychologist, a radio presenter, you're also the author of 3 books.
I want to show you this one, Annie. Annie, before you start, I want to show you, both of you, my book, my copy of her, look, The Art of Rest. I mean, how loved is this book?
Oh, look at it. That.
I mean, look, it's got pages turned
that
down. It's
battered.
Completely bashed. It's been read in the bath. I mean, you know, I have to read a lot of books for my job. And this, as you can see, look at it. I have not read it for my job.
That looks like it's been dropped in the bath, in fact.
It may have got a little bit wet in the bath, but I've absolutely loved this book. It's called The Art of Rest. But go on, Annie.
Well, I don't know about you two, but I think, you know, I am a doer. I like to get on and do lots of stuff, but I can procrastinate quite a lot. And I have found that during lockdown, you know, I mean, it's been difficult because I've had kids at home and stuff like that. But I feel that I've wasted, you know, quite a lot of time and haven't been that productive. Obviously spent an awful lot of time on Twitter. As I've said, I'm going to switch off from that. The book that interests me most, Claudia, that you wrote, is Unlocking the Mysteries of Time Perception. And a brilliant review from the Times newspaper, a fascinating and at times mind-boggling book that will change the way you think about time. Tell us a little bit about that book.
Yeah, so it's called Time Warped. And I was just really interested in why sometimes time seems to go really fast and sometimes time seems to go really slowly. And I think it's fascinating that, you know, during lockdown, lots of people are saying that time has done weird things. And so in one way, it seems, you know, it's been slow. But on the other hand, you think, well, where are the months gone? Oh, this is so fast. What's happened here? And so I wanted to look at what's happening in the brain. How do we, and in the mind, how do we go about working out how much time seems to have passed? Because obviously there's clock time, the real time, and then there is our subjective perception of time and how fast it's gone. And one of the things, one of the ways that we judge how much time has passed is by how many new memories we make. And so the really interesting thing about lockdown is that because there has been less variety in life, and let's face it, you can't go to many different places, so many evenings are all the same, many days are all the same, and they merge into one. And so we've made fewer new memories in this time. So when we look back at this 3 months, we then think, well, where's it gone? Because you haven't made as many memories as normal. And so we think it's gone fast. And that is why it seems to have gone faster than many people expect, because you think it should be long and slow and boring. And particularly as it's a time when people feel a bit more anxious as well, it should have been slow. But in fact, because we look back and this is the way we judge time by making new memories, and we haven't made new memories, then it feels as if it's gone faster.
Wow. Can I ask you a question from Liz? And this goes particularly to rest, because when I picked up that book, I thought, rest. I mean, you know, what? I didn't really think this, but I thought, isn't that just a waste of time? But you are absolutely passionate about it. Liz says, rest is so important, but I struggle to do it. What tips can you give me to prioritise this? So I guess the first question, Claudia, is what is rest? Because I love the book, because it doesn't mean doing nothing, does it?
No, it absolutely doesn't. And in fact, people find doing nothing, you know, really hard. And there's an experiment where they get people to go into a room for 15 minutes and sit at a table without a phone or a book or a pen or anything like that. And they have to just do nothing for 15 minutes. And the one thing they can do is that they've got a sort of bracelet around their ankle, which allows them to give themselves an electric shock if they choose to. And you'd think, and they all tried it out beforehand, so they knew it hurt. Didn't kill them, but they knew it hurt. And they only included in the study the people who said that they would pay $5 not to have another electric shock. So the people who didn't like it. And then when people were faced with 15 minutes of doing nothing, 77% of the men and only 25%, interestingly, of the women gave themselves at least one electric shock. And one man gave himself 191 electric shocks, which was fast going in 15 minutes because that's kind of all the time. But masochists apart, I think it does show that we do find it difficult to sit and do nothing. So, yeah, rest doesn't have to mean doing nothing at all. And in research that I was involved with psychologists at Durham University called the rest test, we asked people, and 18,000 people from around the world told us what they thought. We asked them what activities they found the most restful. And what is really interesting is that they are things that involve some effort, many of them. So top, in fact, was reading, which, of course, involves concentration and some cognitive effort. And going for a walk came at number six. So 38% of people said they found going for a walk restful. It was interesting that 15% of people said they found exercise restful. You'll like this. 8% of people said they found running restful. And so it absolutely doesn't have to mean doing nothing. So what it does mean is a thing that you do that allows you permission to switch off, allows those thoughts to stop whirring around in your brain, leaves you feeling relaxed and refreshed afterwards, and is where you feel you don't have to achieve anything as well. So, but we found that 9% of people told us they felt guilty whenever they rested. And so they feel that they mustn't rest and that's something that they shouldn't do. And I think it's really interesting that things like the running that people described as restful, because some people will say, well, how could it be? But, you know, I think running is restful because although it's, you know, it's tiring at that moment, once you exhaust your body a bit, it then stops things whirring around in your mind is what I find and is what a lot of other people find. And I think that that's why some people find exercise restful. And then some of them were things like in the top 10 were things like having a bath, hot bath, and being out in nature and being alone. In fact, the top five things were all things where people were alone, which I think shows that because these aren't the top enjoyable activities. So socializing, for example, wasn't in the top 10. Going out for a meal, drinking with friends, none of those were in the top 10. They were in the top 20. But I think we sometimes what we want is some peace from other people, a rest from other people. And that's hard to get during lockdown because you're with other people, unless you live on your own.
Yeah, that was going to be my exact point. It's going to be so that's why lockdown may have been, you know, particularly stressful then, because Annie, you know, Annie, you're at home with two small kids, lovely husband, but you can't, you know, running's your escape, isn't it?
It is. And I was just thinking about what you were saying there, Claudia. So for me, I mean, occasionally I have not such an enjoyable run. And I, you know, I always put it down. I do quite a lot of coaching and, you know, some of my athletes will say to me, oh my God, I felt really awful. Like what's happening with me? And it's like, just sometimes a run isn't good. I put it down to biorhythms, whatever they are. And I had one of those the other days. But because running for me is such a positive thing, because I enjoy it so much, the negativity or anything that's going around, whirling around in your brain that isn't a happy thing for you at the moment goes. And I tend to be really positive. So, you know, perhaps a work project or something that's going on, I'll really start focusing on that when I run. And that's why it's positive. And I am a lonely runner. I don't like running with other people. And, you know, for me, even just a 30 to 40 minute run can completely change the way I feel for the rest of the day.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people did find that as well, particularly during lockdown. Like, you know, for me, you know, I run sort of, you know, in order to keep fit. But do sort of enjoy it. But once it was lockdown, I would look forward to that all day. You know, that would be, and I always did it at the end of the day after working. And that was the thing I really looked forward to. And then once a week I've been, you know, as I said, going into the BBC and I've been cycling. And it's about a 50 minute cycle, I suppose, each way. And it's up, it's sort of uphill a bit on the way. And at first, you know, I was doing that because I needed a safe way of getting there. And at first I thought, oh, this will be a bit of a pain. I started to absolutely love it, particularly the cycle home again, particularly in a completely empty central London, because it was like suddenly there was, you know, hardly any cars and it was really easy and nice to cycle and really enjoyable. But also I think that it's for some people it's been such a release during lockdown to be able to do that. And you know, I do know quite a lot of people who've taken up running for the first time and loved just the getting out and feeling some freedom in a time where we're much more constricted and constrained.
Just to that point, and we know that, for example, that Couch to 5K app has been downloaded exponentially over the last few months, and on her Spirit
spirit we've been talking about, you know, get people running. Also, we've got lots of things on sort of mindfulness as well. Do you think, so there are positives, there are things that we've, you know, put in our lives and perhaps we've been eating more healthily. And, you know, I've been doing, for example, yoga. Do you think, you know, the fact that it's been 100 days, are there good things that we've learnt, that we might have learnt, that we will take forward? Or do you think we'll just go out and back now?
I think there are some things people will take forward. Yeah. So I think that people who've taken up running, say, and taken up different forms of exercise, you know, they may not end up doing them as much once there are other things on offer as well. And once we get sort of busier seeing people and stuff again. But I think that but I think people won't necessarily give it up altogether. So I think lots of those things will stick. And then I think it's been a time where people have been reflecting on what they really mind about and what really matters to them. And of course, lots of people have been talking about friends and how that's, you know, meant everything to them, being able to stay in touch with friends. And that lots and lots of people have met their neighbours and have now got, you know, street WhatsApp groups. I think all of those things will really stay, and those things will never go away. So it might not be that, you know, we're not all out clapping on Thursday evenings now and chatting to everybody. But once you know people, you know, that doesn't go away. Yeah. So I think, you know, streets, I think they'll carry on being much, much more community, community cohesion in a way, and know, people knowing each other in their streets, which I think is a massive benefit.
We've had, we're quite a close village anyway. But for example, my friend Dave up the road bakes us pies every couple of weeks. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic. And then I go and do the milk run, and in exchange, one of my neighbours has started giving me eggs. So this is not what happened. You know, it has genuinely changed things in the village that I think will continue, which is actually, as you say, really lovely and a part of, I mean, I knew I was part of a community, but we are in a different way. What about you, Annie?
We've had a lovely time. You know, we live in a, you know, a really lovely village. Actually, you probably know, I think, Claudia, because you went to Surrey Uni, didn't you? So we're just down the road.
Yes, I did, yeah.
We're just down the road from Guildford. So, just lovely times with neighbours that we've never really spent time with before, you know, and going out and exploring new places. And, you know, I think the problem is, and I've got a question here from Karine, and this is, I don't think you'll find there's an easy answer to this one. I have two young kids and it's been so hard at home having been furloughed. Can you give me some advice on how I step away from the noise and anxiety this gives me? A tough question.
Yeah, and I think it is really important to remember how hard it has been for some people. And I think that is also made harder by the fact that there are others who prefer it. You know, there are some people who've now said they prefer working at home and don't want to go back. And I think that's really hard if you're in a position where it's all been actually really, really difficult. And I think it's really tough for people who are, you know, are at home with kids who have maybe had other people who helped before and other people haven't been able to help, and then they've got that on their own. So I think, and particularly with the anxiety as well. So I think it's a question there, I think the choosing from the different restful activities might help to find any moment. And of course, she won't have very many moments free, but any moment that there is, to make sure you do something that is truly restful for you at that moment. What I sort of want people to do is to find their own prescription for rest and to not feel guilty. I think often people feel that if they do have 15 minutes spare, that they must achieve something in that time. One of the things I've done is I absolutely love gardening and find that very, very restful. And I now, if I'm working at home, I prescribe myself 15 minutes of rest in the middle of the afternoon. And I've decided this is for the sake of my mental health. I'm not going to feel guilty that I should be getting on, you know, I need to do that and I need to do this. I go out, and the moment I start, you know, deadheading those plants, I feel sort of wave of calm coming over me. And it won't be the same thing for everybody. So everybody needs their own sort of personal prescription for that. And so I think it's a question of finding what is the thing that she could be doing when there are little windows of those moments, rather than thinking what she must do is then, you know, get the washing on or tidy up or do those things, to do something for her at that time, because that will be good for her mental health.
Do you know what? I think that's absolutely brilliant, because, you know, 15 minutes, you know, as you say, you could be tempted to go and do the ironing, couldn't you? Or write down any, you know, reply to emails. But, you know, it doesn't sound like much time. Does that just 15 minutes make a big difference?
Yeah, 15 minutes definitely makes a difference. And in fact, even less than that makes a difference. So there have been really interesting studies on micro breaks, which are just 2 minutes long, and they make a real difference. And so if people have a break, a 2-minute micro break in an office, an hour later, they're still concentrating better. And they are, you know, then working faster and more productive. So I think often we have a tendency to think we'll reward ourselves with that cup of tea or maybe a break when we've finished everything, when in fact it would be more productive and quicker in a way to do it while we're still trying to finish that thing. Even if you're up against a deadline, to go and stare out the window for 2 minutes and then come back to it, you'll then get it done faster than you would have done in the first place. So rather than saving it as the reward for the end, we need to embrace breaks as we go.
And I think, being a mother during this time, I mean, we've touched on the fact that women's activity has dropped by 7% during lockdown, and men has gone up 6%. That's another discussion altogether. But I think as a mother, you do tend to feel eternally guilty that you're not, you know, you're missing out, you're not delivering enough, you're not, particularly now, you're not homeschooling well enough, you're not giving them the variety, you're grumpy. But just to give you an idea of last night, so I popped out and met a friend in the park. We go once a week and go and have a little glass of wine. And so Zoe, my 11-year-old, and he says, "Where are you going? Where are you going?" And I was just like, "I'm just popping out just to go and see Kimmy." And she threw her hoodie over her head and went, "Oh, no." And I just thought, "Oh, no, she's missing her mum." And she went, "That means daddy's doing tea and I'm going to have to eat broccoli." So actually, it was nothing. It was nothing to do with the fact that she was going to miss her mum and, you know, daddy was going to put her to bed and do tea. No, nothing to do with that. It's just she was going to be forced to eat broccoli because Kim's quite strict on the veggies and I'm a lot less strict. So I think, you know, to carry the message to her as well, you know, just put aside that guilt. And, you know, and the advice you've given Claudia there is to give yourself some time, because you're a much better person and a better mother if you can find those little moments of happiness and rest.
Yeah, it will be good for everyone else as well. So if Carrie can do that, it will be good for the rest of the family too. And it is, you know, it is good for the kids if the parent is you know, feeling a little bit more relaxed. But I think guilt during lockdown has been a particular thing. I think there's been this real pressure that you should do lockdown well, and you shouldn't. You know, all you need to do is to try to get through this time, and that counts as doing it well. You know, if you can get through this time, and then that's it. You haven't got to have, you know, learnt 15 languages and now play the piano and bake the most beautiful cakes. And I think there has been a real pressure for people that people are almost saying to people, "And so what did you do with your lockdown?" "Well, you didn't do anything. You survived. That's it. That's all you have to try and do." And I think it's interesting that there even is this pressure. I don't know this, but I don't guess that during the Second World War, people were also required to improve themselves at the same time. You know, getting through the war, I think, was probably enough. And obviously, this isn't like a war, but getting through this is enough. People don't have to achieve something extra. That's fine.
And this is to Sophie's point. She says, "I love you saying this is you, Claudia, that busyness has become a badge of honour. Why is it a good badge, and should we just bin it?"
Yeah, I think that's it's a really interesting question, because I think we should just bin it. But there is this thing where, and you know, I fall into this trap myself all the time. People say to me, "So how are you? How's work?" And I'll say, "Oh, it's fine, it's fine, it's busy, a little bit too busy, really." And in one way, that feels true. And yeah, yes, it is a bit too busy. But how much is that also just a sort of claim to status and a sort of saying, "Oh, look how important I am because I'm really busy. So therefore, you must be valued and important and special." And so, unfortunately, there are studies that we do think busy people are better. So they did these studies they gave people fake Facebook status updates from somebody called Sally Fisher, a made up person. And there were two versions of Sally Fisher. And in one of them, she would put things on Facebook like 1 o'clock on a Wednesday, she'd put having a long lunch now. And then the busy version would put at 1 o'clock on a Wednesday, no time to stop for lunch. And they'd say things like that. And then they asked them what they thought of them. Nobody said how rather dull their Facebook status updates were, and you really shouldn't bother saying things like that. But nobody said that, never mind. But what they did find was that people thought that the busy Sally version was, they thought she was better, and they thought she was more successful and better at multitasking and more organised. So they attributed all these things to her just by the fact that she didn't have a lunch break. And it's not a good thing not to have a lunch break, but it's so rare now compared with how it used to be. And like with schools, only 1% of, senior schools, secondary schools now have an afternoon break. And afternoon breaks used to be something that most schools had. And we just seem to be sort of filtering out breaks from everything, and we need breaks.
I must be a bit weird, because when I heard her saying that she had a long lunch, I just feel massively like, oh my gosh, good on her. How yeah. brilliant. I wish I could do that.
Yeah, exactly. It would be great. And I think now, you know, people I know, they only have a lunch break if it's that. There has to be an excuse, like it's their birthday, to have a whole hour for lunch. Sort of people feel they need to explain, whereas, you know, many workplaces, an hour is allowed, but just doesn't happen in practice.
Can I just ask, going forward as well, we talked a little bit about anxiety and going back to work, and, you know, there'll be huge anxiety from so many different levels, including, you know, children and Annie. Yours don't sound like anxious children, but that whole thing. Some people will be scared going back to school. Some will have, I mean, I just think, you know, how long an impact will this have on our teenagers and on our children and on us as well, actually?
I think it's hard to know. I think that, I mean, the good news is, in a way, that normal life, if you like, pre-COVID life went on for a lot longer than this has. So some things will seem familiar again. So, I can remember, for example, going back into the office when I hadn't been, I'd been self-isolating for 2 weeks when my husband was ill, and it was right in the beginning of lockdown, and then going in when there was hardly anyone there. And the very first time thinking, oh, this is really weird, like it's all different and weird. And then you get used to it really quickly and just sort of think, oh, this is how it is now. And I think it will be strange when there are other people crowding in our space again in the future. And so I think the other good thing is that humans are really adaptable. So although stuff may feel weird and strange at the beginning, going back to school, for example, for kids will be very, very odd the first day. And there's, you know, maybe, you know, new rules and things they can and can't do, and it's all weird. And then day two, day three, you know, it will feel more normal every day. And so I think that is quite a good thing, that we do adapt. We've adapted to lockdown and we will adapt out again.
That's really nice to hear. You were laughing at me earlier, because last time you came to see me and Dan on BBC Breakfast, we were sitting about, you know, 10 centimetres away from each other. Now we're 2 metres. And you were kind of laughing at that. But actually, you know, I'm used to it. I'm happy with that now. And the thought of changing back again is a bit strange.
Yes, and it will be strange, because obviously when you can sit next to each other on TV, you've got to sit closer than people normally would in order to be in the shot nicely. And so you're sitting sort of weirdly close. But you've learned to do that. And now you'll have to almost sort of one day relearn to do that when you are allowed to sit next to each other again. And that will feel strange. And then you'll get used to it. So just as you've got used to your being apart, and now one day you'll get used to being back together again. I think
who knows when that will be, Annie.
Who knows?
I think, you know, we've learned so much, and it's important to take, you know, some good away from a difficult time. I think if one thing that, you know, COVID has taught us as well is the importance, you know, wherever possible, to stay, you know, as fit and as healthy as you can be. And I think, you know, the Her Spirit app is all about sort of promoting, you know, being strong, you know, being mindful, being, you know, doing the best things for yourself. But you, with the experience you have over so many years of psychology, the importance of staying strong and healthy and physical exercise for people has never been so great as it is today.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think we're getting more and more evidence about, you know, about why it's good and what is good. And some of the evidence is quite encouraging, that it hasn't got to be loads and loads either. And you know, people can always, you know, build up if they want to. But there was a huge review done of all the best studies that have been done from around the world on the impact of exercise on mental health. And in that review, it found that walking, for example, made as much difference on average as running, which means that, you know, some people will like the walking better and some people will like running better, but people don't have to sort of beat themselves up if they would rather walk than they would run. And that doing between 10 and 30 minutes a day, so it could just be 10, was enough to make a difference, but that it's something that wears off, and sort of you have to kind of for the mental health benefits, you have to keep topping it up. You know, it the effect wears off and comes back. There was a study actually that followed people long term that came out 2 years ago, and they followed 34,000 people for a whole decade to see whether we know that exercise can help some people with depression, not everyone, and it's really annoying for people with depression if everyone says, oh, what you need to do is go running and you'll be fine. And I know that really annoys people a lot if they're told that's the whole solution. But however, we know it can have an impact on for some people. But what they wanted to know by looking long term was, can it prevent depression as well? And they found that after following people for 10 years, if everyone were to walk for an hour a week, and it doesn't have to be in one go, 12% of future cases of depression would have been prevented. Wow. And that 12%, you may think, oh, that's only 12%. That's a load of misery. So, I mean, that's loads of individuals. So if those 12%, it would have been, you know, it's worth it if we can prevent it for some people. And, of course, we know people sleep better. And the other good thing about exercise is that people often reward themselves with a rest afterwards. And we know that rest is good too. So that's win-win, sort of double whammy there.
As a psychologist, I think, you know, for me, sometimes I think we've all met people that, you know, I've got a particularly close long-term friend that I found it really hard to sort of try to encourage her to exercise, because every which way she will put up a barrier. And so in your experience, what is the best way to motivate people that find it really tough and do look for the excuses?
Yeah, so I think it is a question of trying to work out what are the things that are stopping them doing it? You know, is it genuinely that they don't have time? Do they hate the actual experience of doing it? You know, and some people, you know, people like different things. Some people do hate, say, running, and some people like it or don't realise that it's going to get better, and that the first time it's really hard and that it's going to get better. And that's why, you know, the couch to 5K is so clever, the way it does it so gradually, so that you don't have too many sort of horrible experiences before it gets better. And so I think it's a question of working out those, but also working out, well, what is it that might motivate them to do it? Do they would they prefer doing exercise if there was something useful at the end of it? You know, so I quite like running to do an errand. You know, I quite like it if I need to go and pick something up from somewhere and I run and do it, because it feels I'm sort of killing two birds with one stone there. And that I like that sense of that. And so some people might like it if they can do that. Or, you know, there's clever things like the Good Gym where you can, you know, run and do an errand and help, say, an older person who needs a light bulb changing or their newspaper dropped for them, so that you feel you have to do it. Or for some people, you said, you know, you like exercising on your own. Obviously, for some people, they will prefer that they're doing it together. So I think it's almost a question of just trying every single thing, but obviously without nagging them. And I think also there's often a thing where people think, oh, well, it's easy for you. You know, if you do triathlons, it's easy for you to say. So I think it has to not, you know, I'm sure you would never do that, but it has to not come over in that way as sort of nagging them.
Listen, Claudia, I always say, don't I, Lou, that, you know, the reason I started triathlon is because I was a terrible party girl. You know, I went out, you know, in sort of late teens, drank too much, you know, slept in, all the sort of things you shouldn't be doing. So I didn't come from a place where I grew up with parents sort of really guiding me into sport or anything like that. And so, but you're absolutely right. People say, oh, it's all right for you. And it's like, well, actually, no. I mean, I chose to do this, really, kind of thing. So we don't all have a choice, but more people have a choice than they realise, I think.
I think what I'll take away as well from you, Claudia, is what you said about it's hard, but it will get easier. And that first 10 minutes of running is just genuinely horrible.
It is. Yeah. I find it horrible. I find it horrible. I'm not kidding. I really do. But the one thing that I say to myself when I think, oh, God, I really can't be bothered to go out and run, oh, I know it's going to feel hard, is I know how much better I'm going to feel at the end of it. So I always think, not that 40 minutes where it's going to be a bit of a slog that day, but how much better I'm going to feel.
And I think if people can find some way of fitting it in around the other things they're doing so that it becomes part of the routine. And I, in normal times, not now because I'm all cycling, but I run half the way back from work. It's too far to run all the way, but I run half the way back from work on some days a week on a normal week. And obviously, you know, carrying my stuff. And because it's the way home, it doesn't feel as if I'm wasting more time. You know, it's I've got to get home anyway. And then I get home, you know, it's cheaper. It's half price doing it that way. And that's another nice thing. So I think there's other ways of sort of thinking, well, I'm going to fit it in. It hasn't got to be an extra thing.
Just before you go, Claudia, this is from Jessie. She says, I love a good book to read. What book are you reading and what books are a good read? Annie, first of all, you said you're reading. What are you reading at the moment?
I'm reading Alex Ferguson's book on leadership. And not many people know that about me, but if there was one sports person that I could go for dinner with and share a bottle of wine, it would be Alex Ferguson.
So I am reading Girl, Woman, Other by Bernardine Evaristo, which of course won the jointly won the Booker Prize. And, you know, it's all of these different stories of all these black women. It's just brilliant. I just love their stories, and lots of it is set very near where I live. And so that's interesting, you know, because I can recognise some of the sort of streets that are in it and things like that, and that's always nice. And I'm at the same time, so sometimes I read that in bed, and sometimes I read the papers. I love reading the papers.
Do you read the papers at night?
Yeah, no, I shouldn't, but I can't help myself. No, I do read the papers at night, but I don't read the news bits at night. But I read all the the weekend colour supplement bits and the review sections and things. I read those in bed. I really like reading those. I do pile them up. I have to admit, I pile them up beside the bed.
I've got a pile about this high.
Oh, that's worse than mine.
No, that's books, not newspapers. But there's, what are we saying, about 50 centimetres, 60 centimetres, of which yours is on the top, actually. So I'm...
Obviously.
I'm reading, and I can't remember the name. I was trying to find the book. I'm actually in the bedroom. I can't find the book at the moment. I must have it in the bathroom. It's called Run, Fat Bitch, Run. Actually,
good title.
I should have apologized for the language beforehand. And it's not exactly that I need that, because I run anyway, but it's really interesting because it's all about how to motivate yourself. I mean, it's a pretty, as you can tell from the title, a pretty radical, no-nonsense approach, i.e. look at yourself in the mirror, take a hard look at yourself and get running. But actually, it's sort of brilliant.
Oh,
no, it's a, I mean, if you want that in your life, she calls herself the Grit Doctor. So she has this sort of alter ego where she's telling herself to get out there. But, you know, I mean, it's a different approach from the one I would take particularly, but yeah, it's you know, I can understand for some people it's very motivating.
I'm looking at Claudia's face because obviously we're in lockdown, we're all on a Zoom call here, and she's looking like really shocked, going, I'm not sure that's my approach. The one thing I would say though, and I don't know if you'll agree here, Claudia, you know, you can take your children, say for example Lou, mine are two opposites. I could be pretty hardcore with Zoe and just say kind of, come on, you know, get your whatever together, but it has to be a really different approach to my son because he's a lot more sensitive. So I think different things work for different people, right?
Yeah, I think that, and that's absolutely definitely the case, and the research always shows that. So the same thing isn't going to motivate everyone. And I think in a way what's clever about that book is I think with the title you'd know what you were letting yourself in for, so you would probably only choose that if you thought that would appeal to you and that that was going to be the way to get you to do it. And often what's interesting is often we do know what is sort of good for us, and we do know what will work for us, which is why, you know, some people will save up money, say, force themselves to save money by putting it somewhere where they know they can't get it easily. They know that that's what will stop them. So in a way, we know our worst habits and we know what we will do. So some people will know that that will appeal to them and that that might get them to do it.
Yeah. And also, you know, on that book and your book, you can judge it by the title. I think. Oh, Claudia, you know, it's been an absolute pleasure so much to talk to you about. Thank you very, very much indeed for spending time with us, because I know you are busy. I know you got your rest time planned for today, but it really has been a pleasure, hasn't it, Annie?
It has. It really has. I've learned a lot. I'm going to take away a huge amount, as I do from every podcast, but particularly this one. And I know I've got 3 good books to go and buy now.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been really fun.
Thank you, my lovely. Annie, loads of insight there from Claudia. I think I particularly liked the thing about gardening, actually, that she sets herself 15 minutes to go into the garden. I think that's just a great tip, isn't it? To try and set ourselves time when we've got time for ourselves. See what I mean? If that makes any sense, Annie.
it makes a lot of sense. I really enjoyed listening to Claudia. I could listen to her all day. She's a fascinating woman and just has so much interesting information on human behaviour. But I think the one thing that we need to point out, and Claudia did say this, is make it a regular thing. I think what sometimes people think is, you know, she explained it so well, but don't just think you're going to go out into the garden one day or out for, you know, to your local park and it's all going to change. You know, habits, we need to instill habits, and they need to be consistent. You know, little and often is what I would say, particularly for people who are really busy and a bit stressed out. But just keep it coming. Just little and often is the way forward.
Annie, I'm just looking at you. Nice glasses.
That's my new look. What do you think?
I think you look, I mean, you look amazing anyway, Annie, but you look super clever. If glasses can make you look more clever, these have done it. You could wear these on the telly.
I like the way you said more clever, because you were just like, you were going to say, they can make you look clever.
I never.
Quite hard to make me look clever. No, but they're my new style, and no one can see them because obviously this is a podcast, but they're gold rim aviator glasses, and I've gone completely off piece. Yeah, so they're my new look. I'm glad you like them.
I love it. Take care, Annie, and we'll speak to you next week. And next week we've got one of my oldest, well, I've known her for many, many years, the wonderful Julia Bradbury, who loads of you will know because she has brought walking to the nation and she's great fun. I know if we were on a night out together, it would end late and we'd probably all be in trouble.
We'd be in a lot of trouble, but it sounds like fun.
All right. See you soon.
Hi, my name's Mel Burry and I'm the co-founder of Her Spirit. Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast and we hope you found it useful. I'd just like to say thanks to our sponsors, Medichex, who, without their support, this wouldn't have been possible. Medichex offers simple-to-use blood tests. Wanting to strengthen your immunity or check for underlying conditions, they offer a home test with doctors-reviewed results. Just go to medichex.com to find out more. And remember, together we've got this. Have a great day.